Returning to Ramanashramam by Dennis J. Hattel. It is 3:30 a.m. I switch off the lights and leave my room, sliding the door bolt and fixing the padlock as I go. It is quiet and dark. I walk east, passing the line of attached guest rooms for single men. I was told that the Maharishi rises at 3:30 a.m. and I am eager to begin my day by resting my eyes on his holy form. Arriving at his residence, the old hall, I find the door is shut. I peek in through the barred window and see into the large room, which is dimly lit by the glow of a hanging deepam. The Maharishi is quietly reclining on the couch facing east, away from me. I join my palms in salutation. The attendant Brahmachari Ratnam makes his appearance. He opens the door, switches on the light and stands before the master with palms joined. Imploring the Maharishi's grace, he falls to the floor in full prostration. I now enter the hall, offer my obeisance and take my seat against the west wall. Bhagwan's eyes are fixed on me. A shower of peace drenches all the pores of my body. It soaks my mind. This is what is called the sannidhi of the master, or the holy presence of the master. The year is not 1943. It is the month of July, and the year is 1993, 50 years later. And the one whom I call the attendant, Brahmachari Ratnam, is by every means an attendant, servant and devotee of his Lord Ramana. That which is not present now in 1993, but was present then in 1943, is the physical body of the master. That which the master repeatedly declared not to be his true form was the body. My imagining that the Maharishi is still residing in the old hall as he did 50 years ago is not much different than those who lived with him back then and imagined him to be the body. What is not imagination now or then is the reality of the spiritual force of his divine presence. That presence shone forth through the body of the Maharishi and continues to shine forth today in his bodilessness. This is what attracts thousands to Ramanashramam every year, and this is what draws me here again and again. Every morning, Brahmachari Ratnam arrives at the ashram between 3 and 4 a.m. After passing through the ashram gate in the early morning, he will first prostrate before the closed doors of the mother's temple, then before the closed doors of Bhagavan's shrine, and just before entering the old hall, he will reverently salute the holy mountain Arunachala. His eyes look straight ahead. His steps are quick and movements controlled and exact. Wearing a white dhoti with a collarless white short-sleeved shirt, barefooted, with closely cropped hair, this bhakta of Bhagavan quietly moves about the ashram unnoticed. He immediately reminded me of the Maharishi's attendant Madhava, who died in 1946 and is briefly seen in the ashram's archival film and other photographs. For Bhakta Ratnam, Bhagavan's disembodied state is immaterial. His every movement and look proclaims his unalloyed devotion to his master. Once inside the old hall, he follows a consistent routine. With sincere devotion, he cleans around Bhagavan's couch, sweeps the hall, and then performs arati to the Maharishi's photo. Throughout it all, he is seen to be supplicating the master's grace. Though there was rarely anyone other than me witnessing this scene, it made no difference to Brahmachari Ratnam, for in his vision of the world, only he and Bhagavan existed. Never did I see him speak to anyone unless he was spoken to, and this I saw on only two occasions. Never did I see him idle for a moment. In the early mornings until breakfast, he would remain in the old hall in prayer and meditation. In the afternoons and nights, I would see him sitting in the Samadhi hall for many hours each day. In a consistent manner, I saw him sitting in prayer and meditation. If he moved about, it was only to attend the pujas in the mother's shrine and to ring the bells at Bhagavan's shrine during worship. His whole life was directed to Bhagavan and his sadhana. He is a rare example of one-pointed dedication and devotion, an invaluable asset to the ashram, and an inspiration for all. It once happened that for two successive days, he was absent from the old hall in the mornings, nor did I see him meditating in his regular spot during the day. In his place, an ashram worker would come in the morning and lock the door of the old hall, casually turn on the light, ignite some incense and leave. Feeling his absence, I asked the ashram office manager where he had gone. He was surprised to hear from me that he was gone and mentioned that he is so quiet, we hardly know when he is around. Inquiries led to the news that he left for his home to look after his sick mother and was expected to be away for a week or two. In the evening, an office assistant gave me the key and asked me if I would open the old hall in the mornings during Brahmachari Ratnam's absence. Officially, the hall would be open only at 5 a.m. But during all my visits to the ashram, I noticed there were always some aspirants who desired to come to the old hall earlier, and it would invariably be open. The old hall is the one place in the ashram where most visitors and devotees prefer to sit and meditate. The Maharishi lived there for nearly 25 years, and the atmosphere still breathes of his presence. Balaram Reddy, an 85-year-old devotee living in the ashram, described to me his experience in the old hall. There was something tangibly distinct in Bhagavan's hall. When we walked into it and sat down, we immediately felt like we had entered a different sphere of existence. It was like the world we knew did not exist there. Bhagavan's presence, his otherworldliness, would so envelop the atmosphere. When we walked out of the hall, we again would be confronted with the old world we knew too well. On this visit, I requested the ashram manager to provide me with a room inside the ashram. On most of my previous visits, I had stayed across the street in the Morvi guest house compound. He kindly granted my desire and accommodated me with a quiet room on the north side of the ashram, just at the foot of the holy Arunachala mountain. Here, there are a line of rooms connected in motel fashion and used by single men. My room was at the end of a group of six rooms. Looking out my door to the north, 60-year-old banyan trees lay out their branches and drop their swaying vines. These trees border the new 10-foot wall running east and west along the northern border of the ashram. Only one step beyond the wall, the hill begins its 2,600-foot ascent. As my room was at the end of the line of rooms, I had the good fortune of having a side or west window. Looking out this window, I could see straight into the door of the cottage built by A. Devaraj Mudaliar in 1940. Residing in this cottage, which is one of the older buildings of the ashram, is the oldest devotee of the Maharishi, Ramaswami Pillai. At the age of 97, gazing out my window into that room, I usually would see this old, sturdy, resolute devotee sitting quietly in an easy chair. He first came to Tiruvannamalai and visited the Maharishi as a teenager in 1911. After this, he attended college in Madras and settled down permanently with Bhagavan in 1922. At the advanced age of 97, he is free from both mental and physical troubles. He can still walk a little, speak fluent English, and will at least once a day, usually during the middle of the night, burst out with recitations and songs composed by Bhagavan or in praise of him. His room is almost completely bare. Not one book, no chest of clothes or paraphernalia. What he has gained by his 70-year association with the sage of Arunachala is secretly locked up in the interior of his heart chamber. I would sometimes go and sit in his room. He would welcome me and readily speak of the efficacy of the practice of self-inquiry. With short, direct and forceful sentences, he would enliven my determination and fan the fire of devotion. For about 2 weeks during my visit, he was suffering from a bad cold. I would hear him coughing during the night and trying to sing with a gruff voice. Earlier, someone had given me a small quantity of ginger powder, mentioning that Bhagavan often prescribed it for colds. I passed this powder out to Ramaswami Pillai and asked him to use it in his tea or coffee. I told a friend of mine about Ramaswami Pillai's bad cold. This friend, who has known him for many years, went to his room and inquired about his health. In his old age, Ramaswami Pillai's hearing has faltered, so anyone speaking to him has to speak loud and clear. I heard the following loud and clear conversation of my friend with Ramaswami Pillai. Friend, how are you, Swami? Ramaswami Pillai, oh, I'm fine, by Sri Bhagavan's grace. Friend, but your voice sounds like you have a cold or something. Ramaswami Pillai, no, I'm quite all right. Friend, but Swami, someone told me you were having a bad cold and you are not well. Ramaswami Pillai, who told you that? I'm quite fine. There is nothing wrong with me. It must be this stubborn indifference to his body and physical wants that has resulted in his contentment, peace, and long life. It was a stubborn determination that brought him here 70 years ago on the day of his marriage. His father had forced him into submitting to the marriage proposal, but he fled. One day, sitting beside him in his small room, he turned and intently looked at me, mostly with his right eye, as the other is failing him, and asked, "Do you repeat it?" "Me? Repeat what?" "Ramaswami Pillai, the prayer. Do you constantly repeat it?" "You have to constantly repeat it." "Me? What prayer?" "Ramaswami Pillai, Akshara Manamalai, the 108 verses Bhagavan wrote on Arunachala. This itself is a powerful mantra." He was not just talking theory to me that day. In earlier years, I would hear him sing this Tamil hymn over and over again for hours, and this, to the displeasure of some visitors and residents, would often go on in the middle of the night. but others within hearing range would welcome this nightly outpouring of devotion, taking it as a reminder that night and day we have to keep up the remembrance of God and abide in Him. Ramaswamy Pillai occupies a permanent place in the history of Ramanashramam and the Maharishi's disciples. The banyan trees near my room were the favorite haunt of the resident monkey tribe of Ramanashramam. The sprawling trees with their numerous hanging vines were the playground for the younger monkeys, and the tangled boughs, heavy laden with fresh green leaves, served them all as a shady retreat from the hot afternoon sun. In town, I had bought fried split peas and puffed rice, which I reserved for the monkeys and peacocks. Both of these, being quite aware of this catch, would regularly appear at my door. Two peacocks would daily visit and produce a loud honk, announcing their presence. The monkeys, some with their infants clinging to their stomachs, would whine or shake the screen door. Every morning after breakfast, I would stroll over and visit the goshala, the cow shed, which has expanded considerably over the last few years. 70 head of cattle occupy a couple acres of land. The new cows in the goshala building, yearlings and heifers in two open, fenced-in pens attached to shelters, and mother cows occupying other stables, all spotlessly clean and efficiently maintained. I am sure Bhagavan would have taken great delight to see it. But how can I say that he is not taking delight even now? I soon became intimate with several of the mother cows and calves. They would eagerly move toward me as much as the tethers allowed when I came. It wasn't just the few small lumps of brown sugar I saved from my breakfast that they were after. Since we kept cows at the Nova Scotia Ashram for 10 years, I was quite familiar with all those special spots around the head and back which are most welcomed to be rubbed and scratched. I had watched Bhagavan stroking the cows in these very same places on the ashram or cable films. The ashram has, with government assistance, installed a large biogas plant. Daily, fresh manure is put into it, and the gases produced are piped into the kitchen and dining hall, providing fuel for cooking and emergency lighting. The used manure that flows out of the tank is later applied to the numerous trees, now 60 varieties, shrubs and flowers, as fertilizer. Over the last 7 years, the ashram has been transformed into a virtual garden with flowering vines, trees, potted plants, grasses and shrubs everywhere you look. The ashram management, V. Subramanian in particular, has taken keen interest in developing the ashram grounds in an ecologically sound and aesthetic manner.